scapula are going to be viewed like little boats or barges. They do look like that. And they're floating on water between them and the ribs. And we're going to watch them float down to the sit bones first. And then they're going to take another journey. We'll start all over. They'll float down to the distal ends of the femur bones. And then the third journey, they'll float down to the heels. Now, this is a very sophisticated image in that there's a lot in it, because the sit bones are not going to remain as a stationary target as the scapula are floating down to them, but rather the sit bones are going to be elongating, playing tag almost with them, except in a straight line, moving down. So the scapula never really catch up with the sit bones, because the sit bones are going to be lengthening even as the scapula float down toward them. The same thing is true of the distal ends of the femur bone. They're going to be elongating as the sit bones try to catch up with them. But it's a game that is never completed. Sit bones are chasing first, the scapula are chasing first the sit bones, which move away from them, then the distal ends of the femur bones, and then the same thing with the heels. The heels are going to be moving down also. Down. All right. That pretty much is going to occupy us for constructive rest. Let's go into the constructive rest position, take partners, and I will lead you through this. As you go into constructive rest, I want part of getting into the rest position to be first without being tied or without the padding under your feet. I want you to do a couple of rolls to each side. I think that will help to center you so that you don't just go into the position four square. So let's do that. Do we have to take the benches? All right. That was pretty quick. You're going to lie on your back, and first thing to do, I want you to roll a couple times to each side and roll to center your ribs. Just do that to get a centering of the ribs. As you take your weight onto your side, onto the sides of the ribs, let that thrust the ribs into the spine. Play with that for a moment. As you roll over under your side, let the counter thrust from the floor push your ribs into your spine. Okay, for this particular one, I want you to complete the turn. What you did is fine. That's another thing. That's right. Now come back onto your back and notice how easy it is to do the rolling, how everything comes together that way. Do it a couple of times to each side. Let the rolling center the ribs in the sockets there, in the spine. you've done it a couple of times or so to each side, go on your back into constructive rest, and we'll put the pads under the head and balls of the feet and tie the ties around the legs. I'll tie you in.
Great tie. Look at that tie.
That's
isn't it neat?
Yeah. It's quite something.
I know. I thought, oh, that's good.
That'll be fine. I'll get that loose. Let's try just a little more flexion here. I just want to see. How's it feel? Is it all right? Good. All right. You have a partner, Soto? Oh, good. All right. Now you're getting lined up, and your head is between the sit bones. Okay. Now the first thing that we're going to do is to insert the imaginary sponge between the scapula and the ribs in the medial or the dorsal border of the scapula. Now the tactile aid that we're going to give is to, first of all, take our fingers and run them around the borders of the scapula. Let me show you on the skeleton here. You just take your fingers and run them around the borders of the scapula, the inner border, and then the tip below, and then the outside border, and then up over the rim of the scapula here. That's called the spine of the scapula, the top of it. And then after you've done that, you're going to insert your fingers between the border of the scapula and the ribs. All right, I'm going to work with my partner now. Scapula is simply to help create the location for your partner. Okay, now I am inserting my fingers between the scapula and the ribs, and if your partner's muscle organization and or structure doesn't permit your fingers to get in there, usually you get in about a quarter of an inch or so, or a little less, a little more. But if that area doesn't permit you to get your fingers in, then just touch the medial border there, the dorsal border, and point toward the outside or laterally. And your partner can use the image of the sponge from that tactile aid. Whatever tactile aid you're getting now, see the sponge slipping from the inner border to the outer one, and it's between the scapula and the ribs. And that's in itself is a very good image, even before you watch it expand, because you can think of the sponge like a little bed between the scapula and the ribs. And it's a soft support against which the scapula can rest. Okay, now watch that sponge expanding, water See the soft space that the expanding sponge creates. Now, let's rub that area. Remove your hand from there just to restore circulation. Okay, we'll go to the other side now. First of all, run your fingers around the borders of the scapula, the inner, the top, the outer. Touch that lower tip. Bring that to your partner's attention. And then, when you've done all that, let's insert the fingers between the scapula and the ribs. That's that inner border. And of course, if you're doing that, your fingers are pointing toward the outside border. If you're not able to get your fingers in there, again, just touch that inner border pointing toward the outside. And your partner thinks of a little sponge slipping up under the scapula, moving outward. And when you are able to see the sponge between the scapula and the ribs, think of that as a soft separation between scapula and ribs. It's a nice support, soft support, against which the scapula can rest. Then imagine the sponge getting wet, water comes in, the sponge expands, getting thicker and thicker and thicker. Okay, now let's rub that area. Now we're going to work on the shoulder blades as little barges or boats. And for this, we're going to see them move down to the three points, which I showed you earlier. And then the first point is the sit bones. Now, here is what I would do to establish that. Let's first of all, you may have to move your partner's arms over their bodies just to get to the scapula, but I want to take the hands and run them down the shoulders to the sit bones about two or three times to establish what that is. That the shoulder blades are floating. There's water between them. They're floating down to the sit bones. Now, the sit bones, as I explained to you, or going to be extending themselves even as the scapulae float down toward them. So touch the sit bones now, and your partner can think of the sit bones elongating. Now, to expedite the process, will you round your lips and blow through an imaginary straw? Blow. Okay, now just let your breath be automatic. We'll do that excursion again. Just a moment, we'll let the breath re-establish itself. Now, let's round the lips and blow through the imaginary straw, and the sit bones go down to the shoulder blades are flowing down to the sit bones, which elongate to the heels and beyond. Blow. Okay. Now, while the breath is reestablishing itself, let's do the tactile aid for the scapula going down to the distal ends of the femur bones. You can take your hands and run them over the shoulder blades now, going down to the lower ends of your femur bones and back of the knees. You do that two or three times. Then just put your hands under your partner's knees, just as you do when you put the pants legs over the hanger. Now, as you are getting this tactile aid, think of the knee ends of the femur bones extending. I'm also giving a very slight bit of support here, as I do with the hanger, just a little tiny bit. And I'm supporting that on my femur heads. Okay. All right, now watch the shoulder blades floating down to the elongating femur bones here. Blow through the imaginary straw. Blow. Okay, let your breath be automatic. We can release our tactile aid for a moment now while the breath is reestablishing itself. Again, let's just lift up. Watch the femur bones elongating at the knee ends and see the scapula floating toward them like little barges, but never quite catching up. Blow through the straw, blow. This time the scapula are going to float to the heels. So let's start again with the scapula. Come down the body all the way to the heels. And you can do that two or three times to establish the moving tactile aid for the heels, for the trip to the heels. Now, since the heels are going to be elongating, touch them. Put your fingers on the mat and run the fingers to the heels. And this is a long trip for the scapula. They're going to be floating to the heels, which are moving away, elongating away from them. And that happens as you blow through the imaginary straw. Blow. Again, let's watch. The scapula has barges floating down to the heels, but don't blow yet. You want to wait for another breath to take place, another one or two, just so the breath reestablishes itself. Remember not to do forced exhalations one after the other unless you allow two or three breaths to happen in between. Okay, we're ready for another one now. Let's watch the barges floating to the elongating heels. Blow. Shoulders here as epaulets with the tassels on them, which would include the arms. So you run your hands over the top of the shoulders, down through the arms and fingertips. Then you take the palms of your hands and put them on the tops of the shoulders with the little finger edges to the neck and move the hands outward, indicating that the shoulders as epaulets or any soft material you like are widening away from the base of the neck. And then you can put your hands or fingers, I use my thumbs, on the tops of the shoulders, close to the base of the neck, and watch the epaulets widening away from the base of the neck from this stationary tactile aid. Think of the epaulets either extending or growing from the base of the neck, or releasing from the base of the neck, or melting from the base of the neck. Any of those verbs that you'd like to use is fine. Use what appeals to you. Okay, now let's smooth the wrinkles of the collar upward back here. Running your fingers up the cervical spine from the shoulder level to the base of the skull. Then will you see the head as a front half and a back half behind the cardinal coronal plane, front half in front of it. And imagine that the back half is sliding upward and the tactile aid is just to run your hands gently up the back of the skull from the base of the skull. You can actually start that really with the smoothing of the collar upward and then on up the back of the skull. And then exert a little pressure on this. I'm pulling now on the skull from the base. And we'll watch the collar smoothing up the back and the back half of the head sliding up as if it were releasing upward. That is, toward the wall behind it. At the same time, the spine is lengthening. The tailbone is growing longer. Okay. Now, let's just let our partners. Well, no, let them assimilate. We will take the ties off our partner's legs. Now, put your arms down by your sides and roll over to one side or the other and just stay on your side for a moment. Rest on your ribs. Now, we are going to do a little rocking of our partner. We're just going to rock our partner very gently. Back onto your back, and you can leave your legs extended for this position. We're going to do the same thing. We're just going to rock our partners very gently. Side of the other, and then onto your hands and knees. Sit back on your heels and fold the trunk of your body onto your thighs. Feet extended. And you can think of the knee ends of the femur bones extending. Okay, now pass those planes through the creases and them come out the buttocks. Now let's watch the barges, the shoulder blades, barges floating down to the heels as you unfold. Watch the shoulder blades floating down to the heels as you unfold. Now, as you As you stand on your knees, imagine the back half of your head sliding up. Bring one leg under and forward. Now you're going to use the same technique you did from changing to sitting to standing. You're going to push from the floor into the acetabulum. That's going to bring you up. Just pry yourself up. Same thing you did changing from sitting to standing. That's right. And you can balance on the femur heads. Now you can watch the central axis be vertical. And the puppeteer supporting you at the manubrium. And you let your ribs rest in your spine. Just let them settle back in the spine. As the spine elongates, which brings it in closer to the central axis, and the ribs again will rest against the spine. And they're getting their tensile support from the manubrium. And now let's cycle the arms above the head, thinking up the front and down the back. Now watch those shoulder blades floating down to your heels as you blow through the imaginary straw. Blow. Into the blowing, let your arms drop. Now, with soft elbows, slide your scapula up over the ribs and then let your arms drop. And again, just slide the scapula, let them slip up over the ribs easily, and then drop. Okay, let's hope our partner's into constructive rest and we'll work on them. You're welcome. And you let your weight rest on the femur heads. And you can let the spine lengthen down to your heels. Because your weight is resting on your femur heads, not in your coccyx. And then let's cycle the arms above the head, thinking up the front and down the back. Blowing through the straw, you're going to let the barges, the shoulder blades as barges, lengthen down to your heels. Blow. And then let's slide the scapula up over the ribs and then drop. And then again, slide the scapula up over the ribs and then drop. Soft elbows. Okay, now have a seat. I just wanted to get you out of the sitting position for a moment. Okay, breathing. What is the body trying to do when it breathes? Basic question. And the answer is that the body is trying to get more air into itself so that the oxygen can be processed from the air and delivered to the cells of the body for nutrition. And the way that it does that, it expands its container, which is the rib cage, in all directions. That is, it expands side to side, front to back, and up and down. That's one way. Now, the other way that it increases its capacity for air is the thoracic diaphragm within the rib cage here contracts on inhalation. That process, that part of breathing we call inhalation. And when it contracts, it creates more space within the container in addition to the expansion which the ribs have undergone to create more space. So there are then these two factors involved in the breath. The expansion part and the contraction of the diaphragm take place on what we call inhalation. So let's look at this again now. The thoracic diaphragm, which we refer to, is a muscle, a very fibrous muscle, which attaches to the insides there, the last six ribs, to the xiphoid process and slants downward to the 12th thoracic vertebra. Ruth, could you get me that pad? It's in the office. I'm sorry. I forgot that. I appreciate it. Okay. Slants downward, attaching to the 12th thoracic vertebra. In the center, not exactly in the center, but it's called a central tendon, there is a tendon running through the diaphragm, and the contractile fibers of the diaphragm, which surround that tendon, all converge into the central tendon of the diaphragm. Now, on the front of the spine here, along the lumbar vertebrae, there are more tendons. They're called the crura of the diaphragm. I'll write that down. Thank you, Ruth. One is a cruce. One, two. And those serve to anchor, to help anchor the diaphragm so that when it contracts, it moves down instead of upward. Muscles don't have any ability to contract in any particular direction. They can only contract along the contractile fibers. And movement will take place in the path of least resistance. So again, now the diaphragm is going to move down when it contracts because its attachment down here is very firm with the crura. The left cruce attaches to the first four lumbar. I'm sorry, the first two. And the right attaches to the first four. Todd gives a good description of the thoracic diaphragm. It is dome-shaped, but it's uneven. It looks like a lopsided mushroom, the dome being higher on the right than it is on the left. Higher on the right than it is on the left. The reason for that is that the liver, which is a fairly large organ, is on under the right side of the diaphragm. Under the left side is the stomach, which is smaller. So the liver, in effect, is pushing the diaphragm up on the right, and it's higher there. The central tendon is continuous from the top with the pericardium of the heart. The heart's above the diaphragm, and the pericardium is a membrane-like covering or case in which the heart is contained. And that forms really into the central tendon of the diaphragm. So when the diaphragm contracts and the central tendon moves down with the diaphragm, the heart gets a little massage. This is one of the reasons why deep breathing is so important and so valuable. Some anthropologists feel that the diaphragm evolved in terms of the evolution of the species at some point in some species as an organ of circulation rather than respiration. Diaphragm now is the major organ in breathing, but it possibly evolved as an organ of circulation at some point. It still serves that function because as it contracts and moves downward, it pushes the viscera down and out, and then the tug on the heart, which is promoting circulation, exciting the cardiovascular system, giving some stimulation to that. That's the inspiratory phase of breath. The rib cage also, as it expands on inhalation, the sternum is lifted slightly up and out. Now on exhalation, the diaphragm relaxes and the muscles that have expanded the ribs and raised the rib cage relax. And the rib cage will then narrow back to its normal proportions for exhalation and drop a bit. And the diaphragm will then rise back up again. It is elastic, so that the elasticity of it causes it to come back up once the contraction is released. That excursion of the diaphragm, we should be clear about. As an image, we can imagine it to be whatever you like. I mean, as deep as you wish. But the actual movement of the diaphragm is only about a half inch. So it's not a huge movement that you might be looking for something that really isn't there. Of course, when you're more active, it's going to descend more than a half inch, but a half inch is about average. Now, Basmajian, the Canadian kinesiologist, adds two more phases to breath. I've described inhalation and exhalation. And he describes two more, which he calls the static phases of breath. That is the pause after exhalation and after inhalation. And I'm very glad that he has brought this out, because those pauses are very valuable in breath. They enable the tissue moments of rest so that the tissue can rejuvenate itself. You know, in all of the autonomic processes, the automatic or autonomic processes of the human functioning, there's a work phase and a rest phase. The rest phase is always a little longer than the work phase, which enables the organism to function continuously without having to shut down. It's particularly true of the heart, where the rest phase of the heart is just a wee bit shorter than the work phase. See, because if you had to shut the system down, you couldn't continue to live. You can't stop your heart to get a rest. So the heart's resting all day long. And the same thing should be true of breathing. So those little pauses are important. Now, what we're going to be practicing today is some more of the forced exhalation. We've been blowing through the imaginary straw, and we're going to do a little more of that in a few minutes. First of all, let me see if I've covered all that I need to cover. All right.
Has everyone gotten
the... I'll take care of it. Okay, this is the way.
you will be presented to the world. Now, let's see. Here's the image we're going to use for they had a taper, umbrellas that had a taper, like that. Well, we'll imagine that the ribcage is an umbrella with the handle, the pelvis, the open end forward like the pelvis, the tip end at the lateroccipital, and the rod of the umbrella is your central axis. And on inhalation, we're going to see the umbrella opening up. Now, the reason that I choose an umbrella for this image is that while the rib cage expands in all directions, it's not equally so. The majority of the expansion takes place within the lower ribs, and then up above there's lesser expansion. So the umbrella makes a rather nice image for that. And then on exhalation, the umbrella is going to close around its central axis, its rod, which is your central axis. Now with this, we have to stipulate something. The umbrella representing the rib cage is within the scapula, so that as you use this image, you have to be very clear about seeing the scapula on the outside of the umbrella, so that as the umbrella closes around the central axis, it doesn't take the scapula with it. We don't want to wrap the shoulders around the central axis. We're going to leave them behind, which is another way to create that space between the scapula and the ribs, which we started last night with the sponges. And this is a very effective image as you get onto it and as you begin to see the image perhaps a little more clearly than you can at first. As you work with it, you'll be able to. For the diaphragmatic aspect of breath, we're going to imagine, let me describe it with one image, and then I'd like to give you another working image, although you may use the first image I give you. The diaphragmatic action taken collectively could be imaged as a piston moving downward on inhalation. It's surrounding the central axis, the piston. Do you all know what a piston is? Piston is a plunger that moves within an opening in a cylinder. You have a cylinder with a bore in it, a hole, and the piston would be the plunger, and it moves, usually like in a car engine, down and up and down and up and down and up. Okay, so this piston action, which I'm giving as an analogous to the diaphragmatic action, moves down on inhalation, and you can go down as deep as you like. And on exhalation, it's going to rise back up. And that is happening around the central axis. I use that as a description, and you can use that as an image if you like. The image I really prefer to work with most times is to think of the central axis as a column of mercury. And the mercury is moving down the central axis on inhalation, and on exhalation it rises up. So we're going to work on that in constructive rest with forced exhalation. I mentioned that forced exhalation can take many forms, the blowing through the straw, which we've been doing, whistling, humming, singing, coughing, rather short, but it's still forced exhalation, even a sigh. What we'll do this morning is to work on that form that Todd and Swigart used, the hiss. That is, we're going to hiss air, resisting the tongue against the teeth or the roof of the mouth, and thereby achieve another kind, a little more forceful, forced exhalation. Let's do that once. Let's hiss. When all the air is out, just let your breath be free and uncontrolled. Now, what is the forced exhalation? The forced exhalation is actually maintaining the inspiratory tension longer than you would in a passive exhalation. In other words, you're maintaining the diaphragm being contracted downward a little longer, and you're maintaining the expansion of the rib cage a little longer when you do forced exhalation. Depending upon the type, it's going to vary. That is, the amount, the length of time, and the amount of maintaining the diaphragm depression and the rib cage expansion. That way you can gain an understanding of what it is you're doing. You cannot obviously prolong the exhalation beyond a certain point because breathing is autonomic, basically, although you can modify it with a voluntary effort, but only so long. So we're going to... Yeah?
Does it maintain the diaphragm downward longer and resist expansion longer?
Mm-hmm. That's right. In other words, that thing that happens on inhalation is being maintained longer. You are using your inspiratory tension in the forced exhalation. You're maintaining it, inspiratory tension. Okay, so we're going to practice that a little bit. And now I want to give you one more thing, two more things. We'll practice a little more in just a minute, but I need to tell you something else. The action of the diaphragm, contraction of the diaphragm, is antagonistic to the superficial abdominal muscles. So when your diaphragm is contracting to move downward, the abdominals out here need to be released. When the diaphragm relaxes, the abdominals take on more tone. Now, what we can learn from this is something very important, that if we keep our abdominal area constantly rigid, it doesn't permit an optimal diaphragmatic action. It inhibits it. So I'm going to give you an image when we first go into constructive rest of thinking of this whole pelvic area, which touches the superficial abdominals, as being like a balloon. And we'll watch the balloon inflate, expand on inhalation, and then let it empty out on exhalation. It's a let happen thing. There's no voluntary thing there, nothing to really do except image, to get you in touch with the fact that the abdominals area here needs to be free in order for you to take a good diaphragmatic descent.
So it empties on inhalation?
Beg your pardon?
The balloon empties on inhalation?
No, it fills on inhalation and it empties on exhalation. It empties on exhalation. Mm-hmm. You will be aware of that because when you inhale, this actually does increase because the diaphragm is pushing the viscera down and out, and you get a little expansion down here. You'll feel that. So the image will go right with that. Okay, I want to work on that. That's very important because all of these other images that Swigart gives in the human movement potential and whatever, you can't get into them until you learn to release the abdominal area. Because that being held tight, The mercury moving down won't mean a thing to you. You just can't get into it. So we're going to do that. Now, the other thing, and this is something for you to think about for a while, and we're going to work on it a little bit today. I described exhalation as the passive phase of breath, where you release the tensions of inhalation. And that's true. However, toward the end of exhalation, muscles here in the lower part of the trunk do come into play along with the abdominals at the end of exhalation, or toward the end. And they help to close the rib cage in snugly. They do that if you take a complete exhalation. Many of us don't get that far. We prematurely gulp in an inhalation before the exhalation has really taken place. One of the advantages of the forced exhalation that we've been doing, blowing through the straw and then hissing today. Now, this action of the muscles here that close the rib cage in at the end of exhalation is antagonistic to the muscles which pull the sternum up and out on inhalation. Remember I said the rib cage is lifted slightly on inhalation. Well, this closing action in here is antagonistic to this raising action. Now, what we can learn from this is that if we can learn to let the breath go full term to the end of exhalation, which we're going to practice as a forced exhalation, then it can be a key towards releasing excessive tension around this area. And what we're going to do is to do a few hisses when we get into constructive rest, and we'll be touching our partners at the top of the sternum so that they get in touch with the fact that as they get toward the end of exhalation in the hiss or any forced exhalation, that this you'll sense is releasing, is opening up. It's a way to begin to change the pattern of holding up there. So we're going to work on that. We'll work on the mercury column. What we'll be doing is observing our partners on inhalation for the mercury image. When we see them inhaling, we'll just slide our hands down the back through the pelvis. We'll start about the 12th thoracic vertebra. As we see our partners inhaling, I want them to let the inhalation take place without voluntary control, but just let it happen as an autonomic process. I want to work also on the umbrella expanding on inhalation, and I want to work on the lower part. I don't need to work up here. Most of us have too much expansion up here anyway. So let's come down to here, and we're going to watch the ribs like an umbrella opening up. And I want you to see that happening in all directions, back as well as side, all of that in the front can open too. Ribs are going to open up like an umbrella opening all directions. Then we're going to work on the armpits. We're going to be touching under the armpits so that you can let this soften and deepen. That has to do with getting space in here that you might have missed on the umbrella. Oh, we didn't do the closing of the umbrella. Let me show you that. We're going to do that image of the umbrella while we'll be touching the scapulae so you can image the rib cage or as an umbrella on the inside of the scapulae, closing around the central axis on the hissing. Then we'll come to the armpits, softening and deepening, so that we'll get in front here what we missed when we did it from the back. So that needs to have space in there instead of being expanded out against here. We want this to be softly spacious in here. Okay, that pretty much, I think, takes care of what we're going to be doing. Let me double check. Oh, yes. I gave it to you already, but I want to remind you that we'll work on the sliding of the sternum up between the ears, sliding to the atlas. We'll work on the space between the glenohumeral joint and the acromioclavicular, so you give this area a little space in here. Okay, folks, we got our work cut out. Let's go to it. in that area now and watch it as a balloon. Now, this is very, very simple. You're just simply going to imagine the balloon expanding, filling up with air as you find yourself inhaling. Touching the abdominal area. That's all you're doing. It's very simple. Just to get in touch with letting air go in and out of this, what we'll call a pelvic balloon. Instead of making the pelvic balloon at your manubrium, see, that's where you don't want it to be. Then, let's touch the sides of the balloon, that is the sides of the pelvic area here. Because I want this to be an all-inclusive image, even though the sides of the pelvis are not going to expand. At least it will help to open you up to using more muscles around the pelvis. Touch the back, under. And I think of the back of the pelvic area here behind the abdominal area, I think of having a tummy in back, and that tummy expanding against the floor as I inhale. And again, instead of voluntarily controlling that, just let it happen with the image. Right. We have a lot of mixed imagery today, so let's take the body as an ensemble of clothing. The body as an ensemble of clothing. And we'll give you a moment to select the clothing that you'll imagine yourself to be. Let's put the pants legs over the clothing, over the hanger rather. And you'll see the support. And you'll see the knee ends of the femur bones extending. The back of the clothing spreading on the floor, and the front part settling against the back. Now, to expedite this, let's try the hiss. Hiss.
Okay, now let your breath be automatic. We release our tactile aid. We can touch the sides of the pelvis here, and you watch the front part of the clothing settle against the back. Then you can go up to the lower part of the ribs. Then you can touch under the clavicle here. Sleeves. And the legs as trousers touch front and back. And front settling against back. See that emptiness clearly, and the front settling against the back clearly. Okay. Now, once again, let's put the pants legs over the hanger, let them be supported, see the knee ends extending, the back of the clothing spreading on the floor, and the front part settling against the back. Now hiss to help it happen. Hiss. Okay, now let's go to the upper part of the rib cage and practice with, it's the same image, but we're going to focus on the front part of the coat up here settling against the back. In other words, I want you to get in touch with the fact that at the end of the exhalation, in this case the forced exhalation of the hiss, how this releases, and that then will become a more meaningful tool for you to use to open up the upper sternum in whatever movement you need to do, whether it be dance or sports or just living. Alright, so image the pants legs over the hanger, the knee ends extending, the back of the clothing spreading on the floor, and the front part settling against the back. Hiss. Notice at the end of the exhalation how it releases above more easily. Yes. Now, take your air in the pelvic balloon when you go into your next breath, instead of heaving the upper part of your sternum up in the air and initiating the breath there. Let it initiate with the pelvic balloon, and then later can work on up to the upper part if you wish. Just let your breathing be completely automatic, because remember, with a forced exhalation, we pause between forced exhalations and let the breath restore itself to normal rhythm. The reason for that is the fact that you have the inspiratory tension being maintained in a forced exhalation. If you keep doing one after the other, you tend to favor holding on to the inspiratory tension, and it can inhibit the breathing pattern, lock it up, as it were. All right, let's one more time do that so we can get in touch with this settling of the upper part of the coat. See the clothes over the hanger, then the knee, the pants legs over the hanger, under the knee crease, and then the knee ends extending, and the back of the clothing spreading on the floor, and then the front part of the clothing settling against the back. Hiss. Again, notice as you get to the end of the breath how the upper part of the chest releases. And then when you breathe again, breathe into the pelvic balloon to start things off. And then let it work its way up. But that's the last. Now just let your breath be automatic. Right, now we're going to go to the lower ribs. They're going to be the umbrella. Put your hands, as I showed you, on the skeleton around your partner's lower ribs. Now, again, all you have to do is to image that the ribs expand. I gave you the image of the rib cage as an umbrella. You can use that, or you can just think of the ribs opening up as you inhale. And think of the umbrella there, which is representing the ribs, opening in all directions, and back as well as to the side and the front. Just let it happen. It's as if the back of the umbrella expanded against the floor or against the hands that are touching it. Now, what we're trying to do is to release any inhibitory pattern that you may be in that doesn't permit this expansion of the rib cage to take place freely on the inhalation, which is autonomic. You just have to let it happen. Now, we're going to have you do a hiss again, and this time we'll be working up above under the scapulae. So let's touch under the scapulae here. What I've done, I've centered my partner's scapulae in the palms of my hands so that I'm comfortable and my partner is comfortable. Now, after you've done that, exert a slight lateral or outward pull by, it's almost as if you were going to slide your hands out sideways, but don't do it to the point where they slide. Just, I want a little outward gesture there so that the message going to the partner is that the shoulders are opening up rather than being squeezing those scapula together. And now, image your rib cage as an umbrella. The rod of the umbrella is your central axis. handle of the umbrella is the pelvis, with the open end of the handle facing the same way the pelvis opens to the ceiling. And the tip end of the umbrella is where the atlanto-occipital joint takes place. That's where the head joins the spine. And the shoulder blades, the scapulae, are on the outside of the umbrella. That is to say, the rib cage is inside the shoulders. So now, let's watch the umbrella close around its rod, which is your central axis, on the hips. And it moves away from the scapulae, creating more space in there. Hips. Now let your breath be completely automatic. Once again, we'll set the image up. The rib cage is an umbrella. The rod of the umbrella is your central axis. And the umbrella is inside the scapulae, the shoulder girdle. And as you hiss, the umbrella closes around the central axis, moving away from the scapulae. Hiss. Okay, again, let your breath be automatic. Now, this time, I'm going to ask you to image the umbrella. Set it up. This is a good transition for you to think it. You just heard me describe it a couple of times. Now, you do it once on your own to get a little practice. And I'll tell you when to hiss. Don't hiss just yet. I want to give you time to organize the image. Hiss. Let your breath be totally automatic. Slide your hands sideways so that you leave your partner with a sense of the scapulae opening up. Although that shouldn't be a voluntary movement on the part of the person receiving tactile aid, it's an image. Our movement, of course, is voluntary as we move our hands away. Now let's get the points in front that we might not have got when the umbrella narrowed around the central axis. Maybe you missed that area in front where the armpits are. I showed you on the skeleton. So let's touch under the armpits. Let's touch under the armpits. Now, the thing to do here is to think of the armpits softening and deepening. Just think that for a moment. And as you do that, hiss. And just let your breath be automatic. Now think of the floor at the level of your armpits giving you total, complete support there so that you can let the weight drop out of the armpits, even lying down. Just let the weight fall out of the armpits. Once again, we're going to hiss and watch the armpits soften and deepen. Hiss. Okay, your breath is automatic. Now, we'll leave that, and we're going to now observe our partners as they inhale. And the inhalation, remember, you're going to see the mercury column, which is in the central axis, moving downward. And we're going to start that at about the 12th thoracic level, which is just a little below the xiphoid process. So look at your partner. When you see your partner inhaling, slide your hands down the back over the pelvis through the sit bones. Okay, now that was to get you in touch with the idea of the vertical effort of breath, which is downward on inhalation. Now, the exhalation is quite passive, where you're going to watch the mercury rising. So for that, we're going to use the hissing, and we'll just simply slide our hands up the front wall of the body as our partners do the hissing. So hiss. Your breath be automatic now. Once again now, let's hiss. Watch the mercury rise. Your breath be again completely automatic. Now we're going to watch the sternum sliding up to the atlas. Now, to help our partners with this, we'll touch under the earlobes behind the jaw. Sternum is sliding between these two points, centered between these two points. And here, I just want you to watch that as if the sternum is sliding up to the atlas. This is another way to get in touch with that, the tensile support of the sternum. And the more you, different circumstances under which you can learn to experience this, the better you'll be at it when you're standing, when you're upright, sitting or standing. you might find that just on a normal exhalation, you get a clearer experience of that. And then later you can do it under exhalation or inhalation. But I find I get a very clear experience of the sternum rising up to the atlas on exhalation. That's good. Now we're going to finish our partners off with just touching very briefly the curve of the outer curve of the clavicle as it's moving towards this outer curve of the clavicle here, going toward the acromion process, but not there yet. Just touch that very lightly so your partner can let the curve be there. Finally, let's touch the acromion processes, shoulder tips. That's the roof over the glenohumeral joint. Now, under it, the glenohumeral joint is where the head of the humerus fits into the glenoid cavity. Now, it's difficult because you really haven't had enough experience looking at that, those two joints, but perhaps from the description and from looking at it earlier when I described it, showing you the skeleton, you can see more space between the shoulder tips that we're touching and the glenohumeral joint, which is below. And then later you come up and look at the skeleton again to refresh your memory. Now, while we're touching these two tips, think of them widening to the wall on either side of the room. Again, no voluntary movement with this, just image it. Now, let our partners just rest a moment. Okay, take the ties off your partner's legs. Now roll over onto your hands and knees and sit back on your heels. And fold the trunk of your body on your thighs as you sit on your heels. Imagine planes passing through the thigh creases. The knee ends of the femur bones extending. Okay. Now you can watch the scapula floating down to your heels as you unfold, and hiss while you're doing it. stand on your knees. Bring one leg under and forward. Pause a moment. When you come to standing, you're going to push from the floor into your acetabulum. Also, will you watch the back half of the head sliding up as you do that? And you can balance on your femur heads. Again, watch the sternum sliding up between the ears at the lateral-occipital joint. Just watch it sliding up. Now, if you'd rather, you can use the image of being suspended from the maneuvering by the imaginary puppeteer. If you get the sense of that, then you'll be able to release your armpits. That is, you can let the weight out of the armpits if you think of being suspended from the maneuvering. In other words, you want to maintain your tensile strength or coordination from the manubrium or from the first rib, which we took up, I think, yesterday or the day before, rather than pulling yourself up by your armpits. Think about that for a moment. And then cycle your arms above your head, thinking up the front and down the back. The rib cage is the umbrella we just worked on. The rod of the umbrella is your central axis, and the scapulae are on the outside of the umbrella. The umbrella on the inside of the scapulae. As you hiss, the umbrella closes around the central axis, moving inside the scapula. In fact, inside the entire shoulder girdle, because the first rib is below the clavicles too. Hiss. Soft elbows, slide your scapula up and then drop. And again, just slide your scapula up, soft elbows. Okay. Help your partners into constructive rest.